Thank you, Gerald. It's not often that I have to raise the mic up a little bit. Thank you, Connie, too, for reading the scriptures. I slowly thought, maybe we could just all sit here and meditate on those. I don't have to really say anything. There's a lot today. And just even before I start, just want to say thank you to everyone for your love and support of Matthias and I at our wedding. And for us coming back, and that we just feel really so kind of cared for and embraced by the community here. And so we really felt that on our wedding day and definitely continue to feel it. So thank you. So for the teaching today, I'd like to just focus on the lectionary scriptures and sort of each one individually and then how they sort of group together can relate to four different stages of life. It's kind of how I, one way that we could look at them. And so that sort of each one represents, I think, sort of the experience of a child, one of a teenager, and one of an adult, and an elder. So the psalm, I think, can show us sort of the experience of a child. And if they're reading from Connie, I think it's a very mature child, very smart child, that's able to recognize sort of the marvel of life and the beauty of life and of love from a loving parent or family and from their home, and then also, you know, to the house of God, and recognizing that love and receiving it. The sort of devotion of a child to someone that they trust and love fully, and that they are able to sort of have this full sort of innocent love, and dwell in that and kind of welcome it as a child receives love so well. And one can relate the Jeremiah passage to that of an adolescent or teenager. We have the Israelites have turned away from God and sort of the way that God had asked them to go and turn to other gods and done some really bad things. And God describes it as they greatly love to wander. So they just are love to leave him and then maybe come back and leave again. It's just this constant sort of thing. They're trying to convince God, there's like this plea to bargain with God, not to punish them. They say, you know, don't even if you're not doing it for us, because we know that we don't deserve it, but do it for the sake of your name. It's kind of like a kid who's rebelled and done something wrong, and they say to the parents, like, don't even, it's not for me, but like for the family name or something. They kind of say they know that they've done something wrong, but recognize that they still need the love and security of the parent. And they kind of know that their parent will still love them because they're their parent, even though maybe they've done something horrible. And at the end of the passage, it's when sort of clear that the writer has kind of come to a conclusion that maybe God is not going to let them off without some sort of consequence. And there's a trust in the just God, the God that can make it rain, and that is in sort of ultimate control. And it's kind of like the, you could equate it to like the smart teenager who accepts punishment or the consequences for their own behavior because they know that it's actually what they deserve, and maybe that they'll actually learn from that. The writer says, this is from the NIV, so it's different than what Connie read, but do any of the worthless idols of the nations bring rain? Do the skies themselves send down showers? No, it is you, Lord, our God. Therefore, our hope is in you, for you are the one who does all this. And then in the Luke passage, Jesus tells the parable, and it can be equated to the experience of, and I'm making these connections, and I hope it doesn't dumb down the scriptures, because there's a lot there, but just to kind of give ourselves something to relate to, but the equating the experience to that of like a prideful adult. The Pharisee has upheld the religious law and fasts and gives their income, which are pretty, you know, hard things to do, and sacrifices, and they think that they're better because of it. But in the process, they've made the law more important than the spirit or the heart of God. And they've made the law God, actually. And the tax collector, though, is not so clouded in his thoughts, maybe, because he's aware of his sinful nature and is able to acknowledge that before God. I think it could be like a successful adult who has worked hard for their place in the world. They went to the right schools, they worked hard to get good jobs, maybe kind of was able to move up a corporate ladder or something and follow the rules, and think that they deserve the place that they have in life. They feel secure, and that's maybe a lot of what they've worked for, and as though they haven't done anything wrong because they've been rewarded for these things. But what Jesus is telling us is that God is in humility and in the humble way, that we don't really deserve any of what we have. And in the 2 Timothy passage, Paul is writing to Timothy at the end of his life, and he's sharing about his ministry, how God has flowed through him. The work has not been easy. He's been deserted many times in dangerous situations, and God was still there with him. He's confident that his connection with God will continue after his death and sort of on the glorious day, as he says, when he will have a crown or be with in righteousness. And he's encouraging a younger generation to continue the work and in this way of God as he has strived to live. And so Paul has this wider perspective at the end of his life. He has endured difficult situations, and God has been faithful with him. He's able to trust confidently in the Holy Spirit and God's faithfulness, and wants to pass that along to Timothy and sort of make sure that he knows that this is not an easy way, but that it is a way that God will be with you. And so each of these passages, we see people in different situations and how they respond to God. And no matter what stage of life we're in now, I think we all experience each of these different positions. I know that I have been the all-loving, praising child, the undeserving, guilty teenager, the prideful adult, and hopefully the wise, trusting elder. And it's encouraging, though, to know that God is still present and accessible in each of these different postures towards Him. There is a way to Him, and it seems it's always the humble way. This is how we grow and how God helps us to break down our egos so that we're able to become closer with each other and closer to Him. How I think we usually encounter these humbling experiences is through being with other people. And it's any way through our church community or our neighbors, our family, our life partner, we have one, whoever we can be with, we can learn through these humbling experiences. And when we're with people, I think, who are different from ourselves, our own tendencies and ways of doing things are revealed to us and challenge us. When we are sort of surrounding ourselves with people that are likely to agree with us, we're also likely to get caught up in the fact that we have this one way and can then make that more important than the spirit of it. I think if it were not for the contrast in comparison of the Pharisee and the tax collector together in the same place, this story isn't really there. Neither person is necessarily confronting their difference. And although it doesn't seem that they were trying to be close to each other in the story, and it's not clear whether the Pharisee in the story actually got the point that the way to God was to be humble, but he's telling it to these people, so I think the point comes across. And so I think it shows us that being with others that cause us to see our differences more is how one way that we become humbled. And after only being married for about a month, I can see how forgiveness and openness to each other and to our own differences is essential to life in ourselves and life in our relationship with each other. It also seems that the more that we try to justify ourselves and our own sort of position, the farther we separate ourselves from God. It's easy to lose sight of the reason for loving in the business and tasks of trying to live a loving life. And we often think that we have good intentions, that we're trying to do the right thing, but we can quickly make the tasks more important than the love or the spirit of life. And pray that let us remember these different examples as we try to live humble life with each other and with God.